also a special word of welcome to the new DG of the department. I was just saying to him that he's like a cat with many lives, so he's not actually new. He just changed the coat. Mr. Busi Madonsela, you are most welcome. And those of us who know you are decided, delighted to have you heading this very important ministry department. And Minister, thank you for and your deputies for a really good choice. I think Mr. Madonsela will take us to yet greater heights. Thank you. May I then hand over to you to do a briefing that we request. I want to welcome Professor Hamdan even in particular, because this time you joined us, both you and your deputies were not here, and the your DG was not here. I just want to say that we have enjoyed working with him so far, and I think your team has been strengthened. And,
thank you very much, Chair, colleagues, fellow members of Parliament. And of course, let me immediately acknowledge my two deputies and thank them for the support, not only today, but for the entire duration of our appointment so far. I just wanted, on a light note, Chair, just you just introduced the DG, to say, I wonder what's new with the Madam Fella. At some point, I chaired an ad hoc committee that recommended the appointment of a certain Madam Fella to become a public protector. And here I am again, guilty of bringing another Madam Fella into your portfolio. But on a more serious note, Chiyos, allow me to express my profound indebtedness to you and the honorable members of the August Committee for granting me the opportunity to give a preview of the 2015-16 annual report on the performance of the departments and entities which constitute the portfolio of the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services. The remarks and observations I'm about to make represent the collective observation made not only by myself but also jointly with my deputies representing the Ministry in its entirety. I also wish to take this opportunity to introduce the new Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Mr. Bruce Madonsela, and the head of the Special Investigative Unit, Advocate Andy Mutini, both of whom assume duties in their respective offices on 1 May 2016. I hope you can hear me as my ears are blocked from flying, so I can't hear myself properly. I hope I can unblock. I'm also pleased to announce the permanent appointment of Advocate J.B. Kafana as the Deputy Director General for Court Services, and Ms. Gabriela Lafour, who I poached from the Tequim Municipality not so long ago, as the first Deputy Director General for Constitutional Development. We would recall that this portfolio has remained without the DDG for quite some time, both of whom are also present here today. The DG is one of the longest serving director generals of our country since the advent of democracy in 1994, and brings into the administration of the justice sector a wealth of direct expertise from law practice as an attorney at law and remarkable public service senior management experience. Similarly, and his part, for his part, Advocate Mutibi brings vast investigative experience against the background of his work in the fields of legal governance, risk, compliance, and audit in the public sector, the banking sector, and more recently, the fund management and medical benefits administration sector. We trust that under his leadership, the FIU will be able to improve its performance. I wish to also recognize the contribution and value that Justice Johan van der Westhuizen is adding, whose presence here today is adding to the oversight function of the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services. And I just add that shortly before his appointment to head Justice van der Westhuizen, former Justice of the Constitutional Court, demonstrated profound interest in the well-being of women by being one of the judges that made regular visits to various of our correctional facilities and produced useful reports based on the findings that they made during their visits, which are assisting us in reflecting on improvements we need to effect to our correctional system. In total, the Justice and Correctional Services portfolio has tabled 10 annual reports in Parliament this year, covering the work of both government departments and entities on the performance of work undertaken in the past financial year. The Auditor General of South Africa has expressed an unqualified audit opinion on the annual financial statement of all departments and entities under the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services, except in relation to third-party funds under the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. I must also mention that we are making progress in relation to the third-party funds, as we have progressed from a disclaimer of opinion in the earlier year to a qualified opinion in the year under review. With regards to corrections, I'm glad to inform the SOGAF committee that an unqualified audit opinion has been achieved in the 2015-2016 financial year for the very first time in 22 years of freedom. We undertake to work hard to sustain this achievement and to ensure that we improve the audit outcomes even further in the coming years. I'd also like to congratulate the Legal Aid South Africa for their good work, in respect of which the Auditor General has expressed an unqualified audit opinion for the 15th year in succession. We are also strengthening good governance and competence management across the entirety Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and the National Prosecution Authority combined put 482 officials through disciplinary hearing for a wide range of offenses during the 2015-2016 financial year. A total of 75 officials were dismissed on grounds of misconduct and 19 resigned during the same period. In respect of correctional services, 34 out of 35 officials charged were found guilty, of which 11 were actually dismissed. Chairperson, the Special Investigating Unit continues to play a critical role in government commitment to fighting corruption. With a budget of approximately 499 million rand and staff complement of 534 employees, the SIU is on course in discharging its mandate of investigating corruption and maladministration in government. I can just confirm that currently my table is clean. There isn't a single draft proclamation that is awaiting referral to the president for publication. I have impressed upon the heads of departments and entities in the portfolio to engage regularly in order to align the strategic plan and share good practices and lessons in their individual and collective endeavors to adhere to principles of good governance. A forum of heads has already been established for effective coordination in the execution of their respective mandates. Honorable Chairman, I now wish to turn briefly to general and specific matters of policy which are germane to the mandate of the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services. At the heart of our transformation journey is a sacred promise to instruct a new legal order for our country and its people that's founded on the principles and values of our Constitution. The path we have traversed in the past 21 years of our constitutional democracy has largely focused on institutional reforms aimed at strengthening the governance machinery of the state. In that period, Parliament processed and passed in excess of 160 bills in the justice sector specifically, which focused mainly on shaping and reshaping various institutions, including the courts, and creating concomitant mechanisms, systems, and processes that support democracy and enable the appropriate exercise of constitutional and public power. The Constitution provides the basis for the overhaul of our country's legal system. It forgive me a bit of a machine error here. It envisions a renaissance of the legal system that predates it, which bears the visible hallmarks of the Roman Dutch law and English law, both of which are a historical fact found their way into our body of law through colonial conquest. The Renaissance calls for the systematic creation of a new body of law through statutes, secondary legislation, as well as progressive jurisprudence, all of which must be predicated on the supremacy of our constitution and the rule of law, which is entrenched in Section 1 of the Constitution. The renaissance of our legal system must uphold the founding values of our constitutional democracy, notably those of human dignity, the achievement of equality, and the advancement of human rights, be non-racialism and non-sexism, as well as the language, which is both a founding value and a human right. The infusion of the above values into our law will ensure that our legal system, be it our criminal law or civil law, create a just, caring, and humane legal order that is responsive to the needs of the people it is destined to defend, protect, and of course serve. We will also be tabling before Parliament a number of those which are key to our transformation discourse, and this includes the traditional courtroom, subject of much engagement for quite a while, legislation that criminalizes racism and hate crime, especially in the light of the upsurge of the phenomenon in recent months in our country, as well as cybercrime bill. These bills are in our legislative program for the current financial year. The traditional courts bill in particular seeks to recognize the significance of the African traditional value system as part of dispute resolution. Let me at this point thank the Deputy Minister, John Jeffrey, who together with his counterparts in the Ministry of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Deputy Minister Obed Batela, managed a difficult process of narrowing the gap between ourselves, traditional leaders, and civil society organizations regarding the content of the bill in question. We're commencing with the processes of introducing the bill into Parliament, and I trust that this committee will soon be filled with the matter. Some of the principles in respect of which there is general consensus are: A, the nature of the court; B, progressive measures to promote equal participation of women in the traditional court; C, the consequential nature of the court, consensual nature of the court, which incorporates the right to opt in or out, which I must emphasize is specifically regulated, that's not just an open-ended approach. Enforcement mechanisms, which will be implemented by justices of the peace, will be drawn from the ranks of paralegal. We have also identified other niche areas where the services of paralegals will be of immediate use, while the development and enactment of legislative reforms are underway in order to address the regulation and professionalization of this profession. These areas include their participation in providing assistance to the parties in and relevant aspects of proceedings before quality courts and in court annexed mediation processes. In the interim, we are setting up a multi-sectoral structure to address matters relating to accreditation and training of paralegals. course, with the project on the rationalization of Magisterial District, having finalized 4 of the 9 provinces, namely Gauteng, Northwest, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. Free State and the Northern Cape provinces are earmarked to be completed in the current financial year. In relation to court infrastructure, the department manages a total of 778 magistrates' courts and 20 superior courts across the country. The Limpopo High Court commenced functioning from 23rd January this year. Preparations for its official opening by the Honorable President Hlekisa Zuma during the month of November this year are at an advanced stage. We're also pursuing the establishment of multi-door court precincts where local seats of the High Court are established as a seat of the respective high court. Of the magistracy concerned with separate entrances. We have earmarked Lephalale and Uppington Magistrates Court for this purpose to serve as pilot sites in this regard. One-stop court centers will enhance access to justice as the magistrates' court and high court will be situated in the same prison. As part of promoting access to justice, we have established 40 small claims courts in the year under review. In all, we have 20 small claims courts to designate in order to have full coverage in all magisterial districts in the country. Of the 20, 7 will already be designated in this month. The transformation of the legal profession remains one of our key priorities. We are developing policies regarding the allocation of state legal work to attorneys and advocates in private practice, and consultations with the legal profession are continuing in that regard. Honorable members, this is the first occasion that the performance of the Office of the Chief Justice is presented separately from the work of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. As you're aware, the Constitution assigns to the Chief Justice the responsibility to establish norms and standards for court performance. Following the historic meeting between the heads of the judiciary and the executive arm of the state on 27 August 2015, work is underway to build constructive interface between the two arms of the state. In furtherance of this work, there are ongoing discussions between the Chief Justice and I to devise a mechanism to facilitate the free flow of information between us. The National Prosecuting Authority continues to excel in its performance against set targets, and it has obtained the overall 96% conviction rate during the period under review. The conviction rate in sexual offenses continues to improve, albeit slightly, from the previous years, up by 1% to 70%, with 4,000. we are succeeding in turning around correctional centers into corrective institutions that continue to reform offenders. As part of this effort, the percentage of offenders who participate in skills development programs currently stands at 91% against a set target of 4,668. The efficiency of our rehabilitation program can be applauded by judging parole compliance with the conditions of parole in that the percentage of parolees without violation per annum has increased to the current 98.7% against the target of 51,937, while that of probationers stand at 98.65% as against a target of 16,640. The percentage of parolees and probationers reintegrated back into communities through halfway houses partnerships stands at 79% against set target of 140 cases. Maybe one just needs to explain that the target number should not in any way suggest that that constitute the sum total of inmates who ideally should be benefiting from this program. But we set an annual target of the number we want to achieve for that year, and we measure how we have performed against that target. Honorable members, I've taken note of and I am considering the committee's recommendations to reopen the halfway house in Johannesburg and name it after the late Councillor Nhlanhla Mthembu, who died during the swearing-in ceremony of councillors of the city of Johannesburg few months ago. This is in acknowledgement of her role in setting up the house, as well as other contributions she has made in advancing the work of correction. May her soul rest in peace. As I conclude my remarks, I'd like to thank the committee for its leadership and meticulousness in carrying out its oversight responsibility over this titanic portfolio. We'll accept, given the size of the portfolio, and it's quite a daunting task to lead it. We're indebted to your insightful leadership and guidance. I thank you for your attention.
Honorable Minister, thank you for your opening remarks and the revolutionary proposals that you are making. I think honorable members will be delighted by the renaissance of the legal system that we are talking about. They will also be delighted by the fact that the long-awaited traditional court bill is now on the way to the House, as well as the bill criminalizing racism and hate speech, cyber crime. I think that is a clear indication that your ministry is matching and matching with the demands of society, and we are grateful to you for that. And we are also happy to hear that what we have been calling for about the role of paralegals is being attended to. And we hope that the paralegal legislation itself will soon be coming our way. We are also aware that there was a delegation accompanied by the Deputy Speaker to Scotland to learn something about how that matter is handled. And also the Deputy Minister, Mr. John Jeffries, has been interacting closely with the ACCAUSA. So we are happy with that approach. And Deputy Minister Mabetla also has been working closely with the National Commission of Issues regarding this matter of halfway houses. We are actually happy that you heeded our call for the renaming of the halfway house in Johannesburg. There is just one issue that I want to draw to your attention. And the issue is that there is a deepening moral, deepening moral generation in the country, and also the proliferation of social ills relating to this moral degeneration. I don't think anyone will disagree that this moral degeneration leads to the triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, and inequality, which are the legacy of the dispossession of African people of their land and its natural resources. The African majority pinned their hopes on the Land Restitution Act, but the efficacy of this act is limited firstly by the cut-off date of June 13, 1913. And the President of the Republic himself is on record as saying that the Land Restitution Act is weighted against the land claimants in favor of the land owner. And eminent jurists such as Advocate Deputy Judge President Seneca and Dumisa Ndebenza have also raised questions about the imbalance in this Land Restitution Act. Now, the question, Honorable Minister, would be, don't you think that an urgent amendment should be brought in this Land Restitution Act? Because being a Ministry of Justice, there can never be justice when the majority of the people have no access to the land and its natural resources, especially because that lack of access to the land and its natural resources leads to this moral degeneration and social ills, which forces our courts to send more people into the already overcrowded courts, and therefore rendering the legal system very difficult to operate. So in short, I'm just saying that your ministry, departments, and entities are doing well, and that is reflected in your opening address. But the root cause of the challenges facing the department lie in the historical injustices that the Land Restitution Act is not able to address. Shouldn't we be moving with speed to amend that Land Restitution Act to make sure that the causes of the triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, and inequalities are addressed? Lastly, I think, Honorable Minister, you'll agree that this racism and hate speech has also to do with the privileges. Those that were historically privileged think that they are better human beings than those that were disadvantaged. Therefore, making a law against racism and hate speech in and by themselves will not solve our problem. We need a holistic approach to deal with this problem. But thank you very much for the good work that you and your deputies and the different entities are doing. You have our support, and we are waiting to receive the bills that you have promised so that we can attend to them as soon as possible. And thank you very much. Honorable members, those were my opening remarks. Now I'm opening the floor to all of you, and I'm noting the following names: Mme Mphahlele Mothapo, Honorable Horn, Honorable Horn, Honorable Schwartz, Honorable Matthias, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Maila, in that order, Honorable Mutapo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay, let me start by greeting the Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister Magwetla, and Mr. Jeffers, DG, and National Commission team. Chairperson, most of the issues that we raised during our oversight, it appears they have been partially attended to, especially in regard to legislative program of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. You know, the issue of traditional cost bill has been asking for a very long time. Now that the Honorable Minister is alluded to the fact that it will be introduced, that means to our community. Very interesting indeed. I was a bit worried when the Honorable Minister started by introducing Advocate J.B. Kosana to say he has been promoted to a position of DGC Court Services, wondering if ever the traditional court bill will still be finalized. If he has been moved to Court Services. But now that the Honorable Minister has clarified the issue, I'm really very pleased. And again, the issue of official opening of the Limpopo High Court, which has been coming since January. You remember, Chairperson, we did undertake an oversight to the court, and as a committee, we were very pleased with the development. So maybe if we can be finished with a third date, and as to whether as a committee which is responsible for the portfolio will be part of that. And then let me switch over to correctional services. Thank you, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister Magweta. For the first time since 1994, the Department of Correctional Services and National Commission, CFO, getting an unqualified report. at least as a committee, at least we did our oversight correctly. Thank you so much for that. We are really, the AGFA this morning presented and us with the report, and we have seen there are minor issues which really need your attention as a department. So generally, I'm really very much pleased, and I know, I hope that at least next year we'll get a clean audit for the next financial year, clean audit. I'm a bit concerned with the, I don't know whether it's possible, the application of Section 49G of Correctional Services Act and Section 63A of Criminal Procedure Act in alleviating overcrowding in our prisons. May we have a full report? I know you may not be able to provide much because but it's some in nature of the application of the said section. And clarity on one-stop court centers. I didn't get it clearly, Honorable Minister. Especially in the mention of Limpopo, the Palale in Limpopo, and Appington in Northern Cape. Thank you, Shepherd. Congratulate your department for the position, for the post. In Cape, there are posts, the six-month temporary posts, 30 per district. I've seen in the Limpopo High Court, in Capricorn Region District, there were 30 posts which were advertised, and they are filled with 6 months temporary people. That is a step in the right direction, because even in Toyando, I inquired the same bodies of the ranking, and the manner in which the head of the Limpopo Region Advocate Sonti handled the whole process. It was really transparent because even all stakeholders, traditional leaders, and so forth were involved. Thank you.
Minister, they can see how effective the oversight is. So when you get a nod, you must know you get a nod for people who have been doing effective oversight. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chairperson, and maybe at the start, let me add my voice in congratulating, on the one hand, the Department of Correctional Services, and on the other hand, the Justice in respect of the third-party funds for the improvement in audit outcomes. I think one of the advantages for us as an oversight committee in respect of good audit outcomes is obviously that we can better put our focus also on the maybe the souls that are still there. And so my questions will then relate to those problem areas. Firstly, Chair, we had the AG just before lunch, and it was indeed confirmed with us that the issue of Integratron Integrated Solutions, IIS, and the contract awarded to them earlier this year is now part of the fairly substantial increase in irregular expenditure on the part of correctional services. And this, of course, has the specific history, publicized history of apparently the Minister of Finance advising Minister Masuta to cancel this contract. Him refusing and saying the AG will deal with it, and now the AG has indeed come out and branded this as something that constitutes irregular expenditure. So I would like the Minister's reaction and his steps going forward, specifically also taking into account that according to the AG, while the contract is 378 million, 100 million rand, only about 100 million now is contained in the financial reports, so that would mean that we're going to sit with this problem area for at least another 4 years. Then secondly, also in respect of correctional services, Chair, the one thing that has been plaguing improvement of conditions of incarceration is overcrowding. And unfortunately, if you have a look at the annual report now, we see that over the last three financial years, overcrowding has increased from 29% to 32% to 34%. And whilst increasing the number of inmates contributes to that, unfortunately, we're also sitting with a position that despite promises to the contrary, no additional bed spaces are being created by correctional services. So I think we are in need of an answer as to what the plan is to address this. The current annual report once again reports that the amount of zero additional bed spaces were created. Then, Chair, turning to the judiciary and the OCJ, the Minister might mention very diplomatically of mechanisms to increase the flow of information between him and the Chief Justice or the Office of the Chief Justice, but we all know there's this still ongoing issue regarding whether we will end up with a judicially led court administration. So we are in need of an update as to what the Minister's stance is and whether there's been any other developments, and linked with that, the issue that because of the amendments to our constitution, the Chief Justice is now part of the judiciary as a whole, but for all practical purposes, the magistracy still is within the Department of Justice, and whether the legislative amendments to give further effect to this is still also on the table. Then, Chair, also in respect of the judiciary, a bit of a thorny issue that we need to start engaging with, and that is the issue of discipline within the judiciary. And I think whilst we are all in agreement that the judiciary must be responsible for its own discipline, I think we are now faced in South Africa with a situation that when we get reports of judges being in a position where they are to face disciplinary proceedings now for a period of 9 years. One has to maybe, as the legislature, start asking whether we are not in need of legislative amendments to ensure that the judiciary deals with its own discipline also in a speedy manner, because ultimately, we know perceptions are reality, and the reality of judges being able to, and I use the word very cautiously, possibly evade their own disciplinary proceedings for 9 years may erode public trust and confidence in the judiciary. So ultimately, when are we at the point where we are to intervene? Then, Chair, in respect of the NPA, the Minister makes the statement that the NPA as an institution continues to excel in respect of set targets, but the annual report, I would argue, in reality paints a different picture. Despite the fact that the annual report itself confirmed that the SAPs have handed over 10% more dockets to the NPA in this past financial year, important crime like organized crime convictions have decreased from 474 to 359 in the space of one financial year. House robbery, which is obviously very relevant, from 850 to 734. The asset forfeiture units cases is down 16% to 389. And over the last 6 years, we've seen a growth in the backlog faced by the NPA in our courts of 18.7% and a decrease in the number of cases with a verdict of 11.4%. And that in itself does not speak of a situation where the NPA in our criminal justice system excels. Also then, Chair, if the Minister will address the issue of a 15% vacancy rate with the within the NPA, and them reporting that they're also faced with a decline in experience levels. And then linked to that, an admittance that they will, as a matter of fact, deal with the 15% vacancy rate as a 0% rate due to budget cuts. And I think ultimately the question to the minister is, given the importance of the work of the NPA, has he, hopefully he has, but has he pleaded with Treasury to ultimately not subject the NPA to these budget cuts, as they, in the bigger scheme of things, perform a very important function? And then lastly, Chair, I think it will be remiss of us not to address this issue. We've seen this morning now the announcement by the National Director of Public Prosecutions that the Minister of Finance is to face charges of fraud along with some other individuals as a result of the investigation by the Hawks into the SARS so-called spy unit. Why I think the Minister must engage with us on this is that we've seen that on the 1st of October this year, City Press reported that the NPA, as a matter of fact, was at that stage reluctant to pursue this matter. And what is of concern is that it was then said that the Hawks have arranged or requested from the Minister of Police to engage Minister Masuta to, from his side, engage with the National Director of Public Prosecutions to ensure that the NPA changes its mind. And that, if it indeed happened, would be obviously of a concern. So the question is whether indeed there's been such an engagement between the Minister of Police and the Minister of Justice, and if so, whether the Minister engaged with the National Director of Public Prosecutions, and if not, to what extent was the Minister either aware or involved with the decision to prosecute the Minister of Finance? Thank you. Now, to what extent were you aware or involved with the decision to prosecute the Minister of Finance?
And I heard that. The part where you say to persuade, need to persuade,
no, I want to know, Mr. Minister, whether indeed there was an interaction between you and the Minister of Police regarding the apparent reluctance of the NPA to prosecute, and whether you then in turn engage with the National Director of Public Prosecutions on this issue.
Honorable Holmes?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mathieu? No, you are right. I am not. Actually, the Honorable Schwartz, not. Thank you for being vigilant and not wanting to draw unnecessary benefits.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Tate. Our congratulations, DG, on your appointment. We wish you everything of the best. Firstly, Minister, thank you. This morning, the AG briefed us on the audit outcomes. And one of the issues that was raised was the status of key commitments made by you as Minister when for the previous financial year, and when they met with you on the 28th of July 2016, they indicated the one aspect that was not implemented, which was a status, which was a key commitment by you, related to the performance information management system that to be used for the effective to facilitate collation and consolidation of information from the various line functions and regions. Maybe since then something has been done to implement that, but it relates basically to the aging and redundant Guardians Fund IT system, which needs to be prioritized and upgraded. This was highlighted as in red as one of the issues that was not implemented. Maybe you could comment on that. The second issue relates to your request for quarterly engagements with the AG in order to improve the audit outcome, which we do see is improving in generally, and maybe you would comment as to the efficacy of quarterly engagements with the audit team in the light of your internal audits that you also have for both departments. Then, Chairperson, I'd like to just raise a general issue which has been an ongoing concern, and that relates to the relationship between correctional services and justice and the courts and public works department, and the need for a political resolution to the non-performance by the Department of Public Works when it comes to delays in maintenance of courts, delays in building of courts, and of course correctional service facilities. It's become an ongoing problem, and you might recall last year, Minister, that we raised the issue of a political discussion between yourself and the Minister of Public Works to try to find a solution, because we noticed that the DGs are having continual problems in that regard, and we correctly say we can't blame our departments for not implementing and increasing beds and courts when there is this ongoing delays from the Department of Public Works. The last general issue, Chair, relates to the ongoing student protests, and Minister, you correctly did participate in a press, if I recall correctly, a statement with the security cluster of ministers, but obviously since then the situation has deteriorated further when one sees what happened yesterday in Braamfontein, where we saw widespread criminality. I would like to ask, from a criminal justice perspective, what steps are being put in place to deal with what appears to be increasing criminality and lawlessness? And is it envisaged that one will have special courts similar to what one had when we had the Soccer World Cup, should the situation escalate with increased criminality? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Well, let me join my colleagues in welcoming the presentation and the trouble that the Minister and his deputies took to appear before the committee. Let me first start with the general, of course, to deal with the perhaps legislative and envisage the things that the department intends to facilitate and present before Parliament soon. One of which the Minister mentioned the traditional court being, that it's a welcome effort that there will be such a bill, and it would also be good if in the content of that bill and in the objects of the bill, part of what it ought to integrate into our legal system, jurisprudence, is the whole role of the traditional leaders in overseeing and administering those matters that are brought to attention by their subject, to avoid a situation that befell the king of Abatim and all pre-apartheid legislations which empowered traditional leaders to administer such matters brought before them need to be taken into account in ensuring that the African traditional criminal and justice system, whatever form that existed prior colonialism of administration of justice, is integrated into that. Would have failed to transform our country if we are going to be shy to tamper with the Roman Dutch law, which is an overall legal system in this country. We ought to tamper with it. Secondly, you mentioned that the Land Restitution Act. It would be good that if such an act is amended, but it would be falling short if we're going to be afraid to deal with aspects of Section 25 of the Constitution. not be relevant for this forum, but it's important because it's part of the overall legal and legislative framework that guarantees private property ownership. And if we are not going to deal with private property ownership clauses in the Constitution, whatever what that will be done in respect of land restitution will be just but a waste of time. We perhaps have to look once while dealing with the Land Restitution Act, have to look at the amendments that are so pressing and necessary regarding the extension of the Security of Tenure Act. And if government deems it so necessary to criminalize racist and hate speech, from where I'm seated, government should deem it equally necessary to criminalize forced and lawful evictions, especially of farm dwellers and farm workers. And there's a need that the extension of the Security of Tenure Act ought to be removed and perhaps be tightened to make it impossible for forced illegal land evictions. Our people continue to live under conditions our parents and great parents used to live under due to insecure tenureship in various farms. I think we have to draw attention to the need for that. Look, we have to look at the role of the Land Claims Court. Most of the judgments that have been handed down by the court at one point or the other have been overturned by the Constitutional Court. What is the role of the Land Claims Court? Who are the people who have been entrusted with the responsibility to mediate and administer justice for those who have been wronged by forceful removal from land, or for those who have been dispossessed of the land, and they resort to our court system to find remedy and mediation. The Land Claims Court, I don't know whether it falls under the Department of Justice or it falls under the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, but whatever the interface between the two requires some serious consideration. Earlier on in the morning, we received presentations on the annual, it's called annual report and the AG findings, just as a means of concluding. Through the presentation, we made some various observations, and we realized that both the department as an overall overseer, a custodian of various agencies, of this department is itself failing to uphold the law, it fails to uphold prescribed regulations. In that, in some instances, the department is found wanting on a range of issues of compliance, of ensuring that the reporting is compliant with the legislation. For instance, there's poor quality of financial statements due to poor record-keeping systems. That is, aging and redundant IT systems, poor financial control systems, and supply chain management, human resource management, and so forth and so on. Now, the question which I withheld from asking the Auditor General's report, perhaps it will be relevant to raise this question here, is that there would be reputational damage to be suffered either by your department or by the AG's office. If these matters of grave concerns, of non-compliance and cross irregularities, wasteful expenditure, and so forth and so on, appointment into positions of people who don't meet such requirements, who are completely incompetent, cadres and cadres, who have got no knowledge, no experience, no competence whatsoever, but simply because they are cadres and cadres, they are placed in such positions. One of the observations was that one accounting officer and senior management in the office of the Chief Justice lacks appropriate discipline to oversee and to exercise judiciary responsibilities in areas which they've been employed. So there would be serious reputational damages to this effort. And it would be unwise if the department suffers such reputational damages. Much has been said which is not good about the department. What measures will the minister and his deputies put in place to avoid such a reputational damage going forward?
Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And thank you, Minister, for the overview. I think one needs to congratulate you. We met the Auditor General this morning, who had also said that you are complying with the attending all the meetings, the quarterly meetings, which have led to this improvement in the quality of audits in the department. And one other matter I want to join Honorable Mthapo to congratulate the Department of Correctional Services for the outcomes. I think the certainty which was brought by this appointment of the Commissioner and the CFO has yielded serious results. And the outcomes, I think they're improving, and it look like they'll continue to improve according to what the Auditor General said this morning. I just have a few issues that I need to raise, because one, you made mention about the Limpopo High Court. Now, nothing is not said anymore about the Mpumalanga High Court. This project we're going simultaneously. Now, I'm losing you. I don't want to speak about the Mpumalanga High Court, because I thought they would go. That is correct. So, if we can just attend to that matter. And then, this third party funds, I think it's a good improvement on the third party funds. I think in the previous financial year, I was on radio saying that we will get improvements, and I think there are improvements. So that is very good. But we may need to attend to this president fund. We may need more information about it and how is it being administered going forward. And the issue of the cyber legislation, Chair, I think we may need to move with the speed of a mirage in terms of passing that legislation, because you'll know that in the State of the Nation address, the President did raise that at the end of the financial year, would have passed that legislation. And the issue about the judges and the discipline, I think maybe we may have to comment on what exactly can be done with regard to what are the issues that we may have to do around the discipline of the judges, because I think we have just a situation where in South Africa, you know, Parliament is being oversight by the people, the executive is being oversight by Parliament, but the judiciary, in the light of this constitutional democracy, I think there's some disparities there. Is it the judiciary and plus and the media? So no one oversights the media. They do as they wish. So how do we make sure that the oversight gets to be in all the critical components? And the other matter will be the issue of education in general, because justice is responsible for education. How do we educate our people? What are the programs of trying to educate our people to understand? So that not everything that is reported, they just follow it as. Because I think even ourselves, maybe the legislature, including the judiciary, including other important Chapter 9 institutions, because now there's an issue in South Africa that there's an investigation on the state capture. So when I ask myself, but what is it that, what constitutes the state? Because the state in its entirety is constituted by the legislative sector, executive, and the judiciary. But if you then move around and say there's a state capture, and everyone in South Africa is made to believe that if you want to investigate an action of an executive, then the executive is the state, then it means that in terms of the education, our people are not properly educated, and they can be easily misled in terms of using some of this concept. And then the last issue will be the general transformation in the state legal services. We have a lot of people who have studied law already in South Africa, and there is a constant complaint that they are not getting the briefs that are able to bridge them towards being just ordinary middle income people. So a lot of people who make entry into the bar, after 2 years they go back home. So how do we radically transform this system to ensure that we benefit from the state legal service, particularly those who are from poor backgrounds, because most lawyers are studying from generally those HTIs. So how do we see that process going forward? Thanks, sir.
Honorable Minister, Honorable Bongo is equally vigilant in his oversight, not only on the Malam. Honorable Majaki.
Thanks so much, Chairperson, and thanks to the Minister for the report, which I suspect is a product of both the Minister and the Deputy Ministers, and thanks all of them for that. Chairperson, let me also take this opportunity to welcome the DG. And maybe just indicate, DG, by the look of things, you get into a vehicle which is moving. Please don't let it stop. Let it continue. Yeah, and maybe also to welcome, the last time we met, we were told that Commissioner Modise was not well. We wished him a speedy recovery, and he has recovered. So thank you very much. Chairperson, by the look of things, we are on course towards the transformation of the legal service. So we want to encourage the department to really keep on. have mentioned, Chairperson, the issue of the traditional courts bill, which is a development that we welcome. But to say it must not end there, because there are areas where there are no traditional leaders, and we still need a particular community system which will take care of that fact in areas where there are no traditional leaders. But maybe not to jump the issue of the audit outcomes, because there are some very positive things here. You see, the correctional services, it says here they were able to achieve something which was not able to be achieved for the past 22 years. That's something extraordinary. But then it means we should be able to prove that it was not an act of God or an error. You were really on top of the situation, so keep it up. Sometimes when you talk about legal aid South Africa, as it achieves, for now, a clean audit for the 15th year, we seem to say, well, it's business as usual. But I think we need to talk about that, because they really put an effort on that. But what I think personally is that actually Legal Aid South Africa is challenging the Auditor General to come up with another criteria to say, guys, I've done it for 15 years. If maybe, I'm just saying that on a lighter note, that
yeah,
the challenge to the Office of the Auditor General. Chairperson, if you look at our department or our committee, we are responsible for organs which fight corruption. Your SIU, your public protector. So by the look of things, as a country, we are really passionate about getting rid of corruption in the public service. But my worry is we don't seem to be having an edge to deal with rampant corruption in the private sector. We are seeming to be letting things loose. If I were to give an example, in the insurance sector, they have insurance ombudsmen who are appointed by insurance companies, who obviously owe allegiance to those insurance companies. And the likelihood is that the private sector is going to get away with murder. So I'm saying, in our quest to transform the society and to actually transform, to make the people, the lives of our people better, let us come with mechanisms that will ensure that the private sector is also scrutinized, because there is rampant corruption in that sector. Chairperson, the other thing that you mentioned is the issue of moral regeneration. I just want to put this, that maybe in we must also assess what are the causes of the moral decay. And in particular, I want us to scrutinize the role of the media in the promotion of moral decay in this country. Yeah, Chairperson, those were my contributions. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me thank the Minister for the presentation and to join my colleagues in welcoming the DG. Welcome, DG, and we welcome back also the Commissioner, who has just come back from sick leave. And to actually say, congratulations to the department. We've seen you going through a process of really addressing the historic audit problems. Mm-hmm. And you are in a space now, as we are talking, that says that there is overall audit and operational improvement across the board in all the three zones. It's not perfect, but there is a lot of improvement. And I think earlier today when the AG was presenting, one of the honorable members said we must also congratulate ourselves for the oversight work that we are doing, because we can see that there is really improvement. Keep it up and do more so that next time when we're sitting here, we get clean audits. Without second guessing the deliberations from the departments and the units, I just want to pose some of the questions and maybe comments also, because some of the questions may not be answered today by the minister, but probably maybe tomorrow on some other days when we actually meet the department and the units. And minister, we want to actually acknowledge the information that you got from the AG about your responses and participation when it comes to audit processes. It's really encouraging because it's very necessary and important. From the perspective of women, I want to actually say that we need to continue to see harsher sentences for femicide, harsher sentences for lawlessness. And for femicide, just this morning on the news, it was reported that there is a matter of a woman that has been withdrawn. But I heard that the NPA is actually looking into it. Maybe it will appeal, I don't know. But we don't want to see cases of women being murdered without any retribution. And lawlessness is difficult because we are not doing law and order. But you actually wonder where the connectedness is, because we are running a society that is almost on the brink of being lawless, where people just do anything, destroy state property, they are banning, arson, whatever, but it continues. We want to see improvement of this. We want to see this changing, because if we are serious about building South Africa and the lives of the people of South Africa, we are not supposed to actually even try to condone things like this happening. Because, you know, from some of the sectors, what you hear almost is as if it's okay to throw stones at police, as if it's okay to ban state property. It can never be okay, regardless of where you stand politically. And we're just saying it to you. We're not saying we're going to get the answer now, but it's a concern that is being expressed by the committee. Also, what needs to be looked at is the number of vacancies of magistrates that we've got. We need to see those vacancies addressed. We've got too many vacant positions of magistrates. We need to see more friendly maintenance courts. Of course, with a better quantum, which mostly benefits women and children, to improve on the situation of women and children. Because, you know, some of the women that are complaining, they're saying, you find that there's an order, but that order is about the money that you can actually get onto public transport with and come back to your home. It shouldn't actually happen this way. Also, what's important is to improve on following on defaulters. At some stage, we actually recommended, because some of the defaulters are people who are very sophisticated, having ties, looking beautiful, like us sitting in this room, but they're not actually paying maintenance. Say that maybe even at customs, we need to start putting some measures there to be sure that nobody's going to travel out of South Africa if they have not actually attended to maintenance. It's things that we want to see happening. We have recommended at some point with LASA to say that we want to see LASA also representing cases of women who have got to look at who are participating in maintenance court cases and don't have representation. Because sometimes you find that, and not only women, you know, because for gender sensitivity, it must be men and women. Even if a man, it's a man who cannot actually afford legal services, they must be catered for. But when it comes to maintenance cases, they're saying that LASA must come in so that you don't find that somebody who's got a lot of money, does not want to pay maintenance, can still afford a lawyer and get away with it and leave the person who is stranded with the children to continue to be stranded. In terms of the third-party funds, this morning when we engaged the AG, what we put forward was that we are busy with the Administration of Justice Bill, which we are concerned about because it looked like more it had to do with legal technicalities. When in actual fact we're talking about money, when it comes to third-party funds, the component that we think is really truly continuing to miss is the finance component, which the AG thinks it can actually be catered for by regulations. But we have been informed that there is continuous interaction between AG and the department on this matter to see to what extent it's possible to come up with some form of policy document. But I think because the matter has been discussed for so long, it's something that needs to be closely monitored, because also on the other hand, what the AG is saying is that maybe there is a need, because some of the members are actually raising points as to whether there could be prescription in terms of the debt and things like that. But what the AG has recommended is that because we need a clean slate to begin a process that can be properly audited, because for now we are not having proper records that can be audited. And AG is recommending that there could also be a resolution that can be brought to National Assembly, which is something that I think needs to really be fast-tracked, so that there could come at a time and a stage where we are saying we are now done completely with the third-party funds, because this has been in the pipeline for quite some time. Public awareness is very important. When you talk about lawlessness also, I wonder whether our people have got a voice now. They have regained their dignity. But somewhere you can see that there is still something that is still amiss. And maybe we are not actually addressing it by not having enough public awareness on human rights. There's a foundation for human rights. We need to work closely with it so that whatever they are doing actually links up with the work that we are doing in terms of the vision that we have for South Africa. If that can actually happen, I think it will actually help us for people to understand that courts are not meant to punish the disadvantaged. Because, you know, sometimes to some extent you feel as if, you know, the sentiment of South Africans is to see people being punished. Because even if you take your matter to court, and you get an acquittal, you still find people still being persecuted on a matter of that has been acquitted. Then you wonder whether it's lack of understanding of matters of this nature and what courts are meant for. But we need to continue with education. I think this is one thing that is very important. We are also patiently waiting for the, on behalf of the chairperson, the traditional court bill. On behalf of the chairperson and the committee, the traditional court bill, we are hoping that it's just about to come. And of course, with the hate speech bill, the name continues to be questioned. And maybe it's something that needs to be debated before we proceed with it as to whether it should be hate speech or it should be clear racism. But also the contents are very important so that it can actually manage to talk to real core issues of South Africans. Because, you know, today in South Africa, you find that there's a new form of oppression. Oppression is when whatever you do can never be good. Whatever you say can never be true. You are a liar. You are corrupt. You are this, the negativity that is existing. It's a new form of oppression that people of South Africa are actually experiencing. Is this bill also going to be covering matters of this nature so that we live in a country that is peaceful, that is actually conducive, and is a better place for everybody that is South African to live in? I thank you.
Honorable Minister, it's an established practice in this committee that those questions that you can't deal with, you can come back as in writing. But before I give you the floor, let me also say that this committee doesn't like nagging. And therefore, it hates a situation where, you know, requests are made, proposals are made, but there's no response, and then it will take the whole year repeating the same thing. We are tempted to want to say there should be time frames of the things that the department undertakes to do. And the time frames will help us to monitor the implementation. One issue that we have not sharply raised, which was raised in this meeting, was the fact that your department is responsible to lead the integrated justice system. And we haven't actually had a full report of what is happening in that area. Because I guess you have the difficulty that you have to depend on the performance of others that you may not have the full authority over. So we'll be pleased to receive some report on that. Another thing, as you heard, that there's even a suggestion of a special court to deal with the student. And I guess your deputy, the Democrata, and the National Commission would be worried because rehabilitation and social integration is a very difficult matter. So anything that would increase overcrowding in the correctional centers would be a problem. Now, one is just wondering whether we really don't need any indaba with all the role players just to look at this area of rehabilitation and social integration, because the population in the correctional services is young people, and if our rehabilitation is not effective in the next 20 years, this country will be run by ex-offenders who are not rehabilitated. But another concern, Minister and Deputy Minister, is the question of a project that was given to the Investor Forte to assess the jurisprudence. And it seems to have disappeared. We're not hearing anything about that. And one wonders whether these universities who sometimes sit in the ivory towers, the right forums to assess this jurisprudence. But also, you know, the question of language, especially indigenous languages, is a very important matter. Because if a court is sitting in Skukuneland or Nongo, and the magistrate is African, the interpreter is African, the prosecutor is African, why should that court be conducted in English? To give you an example, there is a court where a man wanted to divorce his wife, and he says, she's denying me the blanket, undimamapai, in the Sotho language. Now, in English, it would be denial of conjugal rights. And the
blankets. Why should you waste our time in asking for blankets? It shows how justice can miscarry because of language. So, Minister, we are saying that we cannot outsource the responsibility to introduce indigenous language in the courts. We can outsource it to universities, and that's why we are not getting any reports from the universities on progress on this matter. So we want to take the responsibility, and we really need to be told how soon we can get a report on the indigenization in the process. I know also that since 2007, the issue of the community courts was on the agenda, and there was a pilot project in Pretoria, but that also has disappeared from the radar. We don't know what is happening. But also, I think as this committee, we shouldn't have holy cows. Honorable Matthias was talking about the pre-colonial system and how it could impact on the question of the Batembu chief. We have read that the King of the Zulus support the Abatembu, and these questions like this can polarize society. So I think we need to deal with them, and if there is a position, that position must be communicated to the people of South Africa so that they can judge for themselves. But also the question of the Constitution, Section 25, these matters must not be holy cows. They need to be dealt with. Honorable Minister, there's also the demography in the Land Claims Court. It is said that justice must be done and be seen to be done. And now, if the court is what Nelson Mandela would describe as a white man's court, in a court that deals with the land dispossession, would the majority of the African people see justice being done in that court? Our view is that that court is neglected. Of course, there's always a majority in any situation. So I'm reflecting the position of the majority to the Honorable Horn next to you. Now, I'm saying that justice has got to be done and be seen to be done. So the demography in our courts is very important because we want to de-racialize society. We want to create a non-racial society. But the other issue is what Honorable Majake raised here, that in a situation like ours, you have Legal Aid South Africa, which is doing so well, but not doing well funding more criminal cases than land claims cases. And you have Foundation for Human Rights funding moot courses. And there is no funding for advice centers, for paralegals, which actually deal with the core business of making justice accessible to the people. So, Minister, we are in short requesting that you must set the agenda for these institutions, because otherwise the good work that your department is doing may come and be overwhelmed by omissions, because people who set the agenda elsewhere are not addressing, or maybe seem not to be addressing, the core issues. So for this year, Minister, we think that from our discussions, the program of action must arise so that next year we must not come back to any of the issues we are dealing with. We must be having a program of action so that this committee can oversee the implementation of a program of action
and not serve to remind the department what they had to do in 2016. Thank you very much. Over to you.
May I, with your kind permission, allow my colleagues and the two deputies, if they want to delve into any of the matters raised, to have the first bite of that opportunity, and then I can delve into this, and there may be points here and there where, with your permission, I could ask the relevant accounting officers to give specific detail, preferably in their presence here, so that I'm also privy to the exact responses that have been given, precisely so that if there are follow-up issues that as the minister will need to do with administration, at least we're privy to how they have responded to those issues. Follow your leadership.
Shall I kick off? I'm also mindful of time because I see you've got, I think, correctional services, which you've still got to fit in the afternoon or the rest of the afternoon. But let me just respond on a few issues just briefly. I mean, the issue of the Land Claims Court and the land restitution process, I mean, the most of it is under another ministry. The court obviously is a court, so falls under justice, although and the selection of judges is done by the Judicial Services Commission. But and I think we should give you the and officials from the department, we should give you the statistics of race and gender of that court. Then some of the issues, I mean, the Department of Justice is coming back, the DG is the accounting officer, so some of the issues he could respond to. The question of the President's Fund, I mean, he's the accounting officer for that. That is basically the money being used, and as far as I know, there are no problems with that audit. But for the TRC follow-up issues, so it's being used to pay out the money for people to study if they qualify within those TRC regulations. That was recently expanded to include, I think, more of a living allowance as well. The issue of vacancies of the magistrates, I mean, a large number of vacancies were advertised earlier this year. I think the closing date was June. That's for the district court and senior court magistrates, and those there's a process of screening and then shortlisting, and then there will be interviews. There were about 35 regional court magistrate posts that were filled earlier this year. Once that's done, most of the backlog in the magistrates would have been met. The issue just of court backlogs, it's not fair to blame the NPA for court backlogs. That's actually a judicial project. That's sort of more under the judiciary or under the magistracy. Just the one issue with legal aid, I mean, there's requests for legal aid to do more work. That would depend on more money. And everybody is facing budget cuts, including legal aid. They've got a constitutional requirement to provide representation in criminal matters, which it would not be a fair trial if they don't do that. So their ability to do additional work, such as representing people in maintenance cases, would be, and land claims matters would depend on the budget. But that is something that is with yourselves as Parliament. The issue of the language, use of languages in the courts, there was a report given to the committee, a pilot project in the Northwest on the use of Setswana in courts in the area. But it's something, I mean, I think again maybe the officials, Mr. Skorsana, can go into that when the department actually appears. There were some legal questions that the then Judge President of the Northwest, the current Chief Justice, then raised at that time. And then just with the legislation, cybercrime, what the president had said, it would be tabled this year. It's how long it takes for you to pass it would depend on you. And the president's, I just checked with it was in the reply to the State of the Nation. It's about to enter into the cabinet process, so hopefully it would be tabled soon. Hate speech and hate crimes is also going into the cabinet process. But that is for then publication by the department for broader comment, broader consultation. I think that the issue of the Foundation for Human Rights. I mean, they do fund, and I think they are meant to come and appear before the committee at some stage. That's not government money, it's money, it's grants from the European Union, which goes back to the time when President Mandela's days, and agreement between the South African government and the European Union that money would be controlled by a private body, not a state body. But they do fund advice offices, a number of them. And they can give you reports on that, but there's obviously a different kind of accountability over those funds because it's not state money that's been given. I think let me leave it like that for now.
Are you fine? Thank you, Chair, for those. Useful both comments and questions which focus us, keep us on our toes as well. I want to echo the sentiment of the Deputy Minister that fundamentally the issue of land restitution from the point of view also of, on one hand, holding the constitutional injunction under the Bill of Rights of, on the one hand, respecting property rights, and on the other, addressing past injustice with regard to access and ownership of land, is a matter that falls fundamentally within the realm of the portfolio of rural development. So I wouldn't want to venture into the substantive policy matters arising therefrom, and would urge that the committee considers engaging the relevant portfolio directly. Safe to say that to the extent that there is common interest between ourselves as justice that department, through a system that we have initiated of bilateral engagement with our counterparts on matters of mutual interest. We have started to do so with the Ministry of Rural Development and Land Affairs earlier this year. It was one of the earlier interactions that we had in that manner, having started with the Minister of Transport to deal with the issue, among others, of the lack of seriousness being attached to traffic transgressions with the fatal consequences. Basically, what I'm saying is that we have begun a process of identifying areas of common interest with different land function ministries. We've interacted with the Ministry of Health now of late, for example, given the challenges associated with the exponential rise in state liability relating to medical malpractice. We had agreed at that initial meeting with the Ministry of Land long before even the constitutional judgment came up, that there is a lot more work that we need to do in preparation for the next round of engagement. And among the issues that we identified is the system of judicial appointments in the area of land claims. Currently, you'd be aware that the effect of the court judgment that certified the Amendment Act was not only to tamper with the reforms that were envisaged under the law to the institution system, but equally it effectively certifies all reforms envisaged by that bill, including those were aimed at improving the system of judicial appointments to the Land Claims Court. And what we are considering currently is to sever out that aspect and actually deal with it in separate legislation. Also, in order to put across a proposal that says we need to consolidate all matters relating to the management of courts, including judicial appointments, under law governing that aspect, as opposed to having aspects especially relating to specialist courts such as land claims, such as labor courts, being dealt with, strutting between different dispensations or regimes, such as, for example, the Labor Relations Act, dealing with aspects of the labor court, and then the judicial matters dealing with other aspects. So equally, even with land claims, we're looking at streamlining the system of managing those courts as courts under a dispensation that governs courts and not strut between different dispensations. But that is a policy matter which obviously would have to go to cabinet first, as you know. Policy determined by the executive collective under the constitution. So we would need to get that endorsement before we can approach you accordingly. But these are matters that are under consideration and work is ongoing in that regard. You raised another context to this issue, and that is the issue of inequality that carries as part of the legacy of colonization and apartheid, which manifests in the unequal access to the economy and consequently create social disparities amongst our people as a matter that is more at the heart of racism and efforts to eradicate it than just utterances and disparaging comments and those kind of things. I would want to say firstly that I believe that a plethora of laws since 94 have been passed to address specific aspects of racism, sexism, and other forms of social marginalization. And of course, there's always been the question, to what extent have these instruments been effectively implemented? How effective were they in their design in the first place? Did they yield the desired results, 22 years of democracy? What more needs to be done? Now, if you put aside the hate crimes bill, which is intended to deal with one aspect or certain aspects of the challenge, we have put across after 15 years of delay following committed to come up with a national strategy to uproot racism and the other isms, where we have finally got cabinet this year, was it the end of last year or the end of last year, to approve the publication of the NAP, National Action Plan, for public comment. And of course the closing date was extended to the 31st of August, and we're currently studying the input we received in order to revise that plan for further submission to cabinet, with a view to finding final endorsement there, so that we can come back to this parliament with the final product for final consultation with parliament before institutionalizing it into official national policy on the matter. And that's where the matter of racism gets dealt with in a much more comprehensive way, or seeks to be dealt with in a much more comprehensive way than the draft legislation I alluded to earlier. But of course, sticking with the issue of access to land and land restitutions, there's also been other issues raised relating to ESTA, for example, the efficacy of its implementation and enforcement, which are all matters that going forward we will need to further engage on as part of the broader discourse around effective enforcement of our laws. And where issues of capacity, if you talk of rural justice, for example, I worked for an organization called Rights for Human Rights, which back in the late 80s and 90s created a special project called the Rural Justice Project, which was aimed at creating capacity to litigate in defense of the rights of rural people, especially who found themselves farmed and being subjected to all manner of injustices. And I'm sure yourself, Chairperson, have had experience in the area of community law advice and legal assistance in focusing on various areas of vulnerability. So it is a matter that, and also when you talk of paralegals, they have been filling the gaps in the justice system in ensuring that people have full access to justice. And this is one area where over the years the contribution they've made has proved to be quite invaluable. And that's why what we're saying is that when we deal with paralegals, we shouldn't confine ourselves to the formal issues of regulating, professionalizing, setting norms and standards and those kind of issues, which are important. But I think we should move from the premise of acknowledging the genuine and true contribution that they have made over the years in plugging huge gaps when it comes to access to justice for our people, especially in rural areas and other deprived communities. So we move from that premise to begin to say, where are we using this and how effective are we using this as we speak? How can we expand their utilization? Legal Aid is using them. I believe the NPA is using them. Just talking about the state, is already using them over and above the traditional
areas where they've been used in the past, mainly in their community centers and other governmental organizations. But that is a matter that I think we should return to a more fully in due course. Now, the issue of the one being a fundamental driver of the other, former being a fundamental driver of the other. The issue of Section 49 and 63, I think the National Commissioner can comment on that. There's been engagement between himself and the National Director of Public Prosecutions. How far they have gone at the level of implementation is something is best placed to address. But there has been an agreement that we should use every other opportunity in the statutory arrangement.
Something interesting in your report made us to eat up all your time. So we wouldn't mind to request you to leave it there. I'm being advised that it would suffice if we get some written responses for the rest by tomorrow, so that we
Except if you could give me a chance to address one or two issues of that are in the public space. If I do not touch on those, and I'll try to be as brief as I can. First of all, let me just indicate that the INS issue, the awarding of the tender relating to the rollout of inmate information management system is a matter that is sub judice, as you would well be aware. But over and above that, a report that was submitted to me by the Minister of Finance requesting me to take particular action itself has been subjected to that judicial process in the manner that specifically in relation to me, I have been issued with an interdict preventing me from acting on it until that particular matter has been finalized. And so far as the promise that I had made that the matter will be revisited upon the receipt of the AG's report, I can confirm that I have subsequent to that report formally written to the accounting officer pointing him to the recommendation of the AG's report, and I've left it to him to take the matters very further. The other matter that I would want to take advantage of relates to the matter that was announced this morning. The question was asked if I had had any particular interactions with the Minister of Police, etc. To put matters simply, as he has announced this morning, the National Director of Public Prosecutions has taken a decision which is made public. In that announcement, he also alluded to the fact that he took me into his confidence ahead of the announcement, which is also true, and also with the view to alerting the president of his decision.
decision. And I can confirm that the same has occurred from my side as well. Any other details relating to that matter, I guess, would be a matter that can be interacted with directly with the national director. So, now, Chair, I just would have loved an opportunity to interact in person with the committee with most of the matters that have been put to me by way of the approximately 40 odd questions that have been put to me this afternoon. Because I think it's very useful and very important that I'm given the opportunity in person to account to this portfolio committee on matters that fall within my responsibility. To simply reduce these matters to writing sometimes does not serve the intended purpose. But I accept that in light of the arrangements that you have made, it is not possible for me to have that opportunity, and I respect that situation. Thank you very much.
No, Chair, I just want to support the Minister on what he's just said about the engagement with him, and I do appreciate that the program was agreed upon beforehand, but it is regrettable in my many years of experience on the Justice Committee, we have had a lengthy engagement where we've been able to engage with the Minister, and I don't think it's fair to him or the deputies that they are now expected to respond in writing. So we do have limited time. I appreciate the pressures of the BBR process. I'm not blaming the committee, but it is something that we need to look into going forward to have more time with the minister and deputy ministers, because I think it's not only unfair to them, but it's also unfair to us that we can't engage more in detail. So maybe, Acting Chair, that's something we can look at going forward, just to have more time. Thank you, Chair.
I had not raised my hand, but one other thing is most of the questions that have been put forward to the minister and the deputies will still be dealt with when we engage with the departments and the units.
Maybe what we could, a suggestion, if it's possible to accommodate in the program, is after you finish your hearings, if there's then any time for a further engagement with the minister and the deputy ministers, and in particular then there would be presumably the issues identified that require a political response rather than an administrative one. Maybe that's something you could look at, particularly through the chair and the whip.
You see, Chair, I just want to give context to this. The difficulty that you create for yourselves is that when we have to reduce our responses in writing, because of the need for caution in the manner in which we couch matters, we become a bit circumspect ourselves. And in a sense, you might feel that we're not being frank or candid in the manner in which we respond to issues. And that's just the limiting factor when you reduce things to writing. And that's really the content in which I felt the committee could have benefited for more, in my opinion, if oral engagement was allowed to be prevented. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, and your Deputy Magweta and Jeffrey. Thank you for the overview and your excuse. Yes. Thank you. Can we take a 5 minute break, then we come back for the admin? 5 minute break. Can we reconvene? 5 minutes. Gone.
How's it? I owe you next. And you know what my problem is? The amounts are not studying. I'm not sure. We haven't forgotten, but LIA performance agreement should be check the Pretoria office because it was with this. With no, I'm saying my Pretoria office.
Oh,
if you can write an email to do it. No, I'm just checking to him for him to confirm with the commissioner's office whether he signed it off as is, because there was an issue around the timing and the date between him and the minister. So they were supposed to get in touch. And then she would sign. Okay. Yeah.
I think he'll have.